Hey, you know what? I just listened to this. You know who Robert Daltrey is, right?
Yeah, singer type bloke, yeah.
I just heard an interview with him. Now, he's obviously older than us, but during the
In his
interview,
60s, weren't he, Roger?
yeah, somewhere in there, I was just curious because they were talking about how his dad was in the war, and that back then, when he was a kid, he grew up when Britain had been bombed, and the there was a lot of the city was in rubble, and that's how he grew up. Now, were your parents around during that period, or was that before their time?
I'll have to think now. Hang on. When did my mum die? My mum would have been a child
Okay.
in the Second World War.
Okay.
But she should have seen at least the tail end of it. But bearing in mind, we're quite rural and quite northern. So,
Okay.
well, we're middle of north to middle of the country.
Okay.
But the vast majority of bombing was obviously industrial areas or capitals.
Yeah.
So we sit in between Leeds and Manchester, and they would have received an element of bombing, but the village and area, because my mum's family had farming stock.
Okay. So they were away from all that. I was just curious because it was fascinating. It was a piece of history I'm not very familiar with. We talk a lot about the history of the US, but it's just interesting to think about the people of that time in England.
And my grandfather was a butcher. Now, my grandfather was an extremely large man. So he was a 350 pounder as well.
Was he really? I'll be damned.
Yes, 6 foot 2, and was well known for moving half sides of beef and half cows around in the abattoirs, just throwing them over his shoulder and walking off with him. He was a big, strong fella. And he was deemed as being too large to join the military. So he did spend a period of time on the coastal batteries, but he spent the vast majority of the war black market butchering in his basement.
Really?
Yeah.
Black market butchering. How does it, how did, why is it black market?
Because there was meat rationing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So what happened was, obviously, rural area farmers would secretly slaughter animals and then sell the meat privately.
Oh, wow.
So he used to butcher them in the basement, and the basement of my parents' house. The house is sold now, but I spent quite a lot of time in my youth. When you go into the basement of the family home, the house was quite strange in a sense, probably for you guys, but not uncommon in the area I live in, and it was built slightly into a hillside. So the front of the house was 2 stories, but the back of the house was 3 stories.
Oh yeah, no, I know what you mean. Sure.
So instead of there being a, it wasn't a basement in the sense that the basement was underground, you had external access at
Yeah.
ground level into the basement.
Yeah, we call it like a walkout, we call it.
Okay, and the local copper used to come round and get his share. You know, everybody got their cut in order to keep a blind eye. But I remember going in the cellar and seeing the old meat cleavers hung up and the meat hooks hung up in the eaves and the big chopping block still in there and everything else.
Wow. That was a cool profession, butchering. It's something that at least here it's not what it used to be. Now it's all industrial.
It's dying out here as well. I mean, I use a local farm shop for my meat supply,
Yeah.
and got to know. And there's a few butchers at the farm. There's probably about a dozen butchers work at the farm shop, and they were saying there's very few butchery courses, and because a couple of the guys weren't particularly good or were particularly. There's one. It's a standing joke. He's always going on holiday, and he just rings up and says, "Right, I'm on holiday next week. I won't be coming in."
Yeah.
And I'm like, why hasn't he been sacked? And they said, because we can't get butchers. There are none.
Oh wow.
Seems to be a massively dying trade over here.
Hey, that I'm doing a test recording right now. Do you mind if I add this little story in? Because this is fascinating. I think people would love it.
No, of course not.
All right, I'll put it right at the start of the show, right before we open it up.
Advices Radio Network. jerks, but the jerks lack me.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, what is up, man? How you been?
I'm good. Back from holiday and back into the swing of work and now needing another holiday.
I forgot to do a word of the week last time, a vocab word. But I thought about it and I want to do holiday as our vocab word because we don't say that here. Holiday to us is Christmas or Easter. It's not when you go away on a trip. We call that vacation. We never say holiday. So I like that one.
Okay. You describe seasonal periods as holiday, don't you?
Yes.
The holiday season, so to speak, rather than actual the physical going away as a holiday.
Exactly. But it makes total sense to me. I like it. So you had a good rest of your trip. Last time we talked, you still had a week left. And then we didn't record for a week because you were traveling home the day we would normally record. How'd everything go getting back home and settling back into normal life?
Trip was uneventful. A bit boring, but just one of those things. So I'm not the best of flyers.
Okay.
I am lovely and brown, which proves I am not ginger. So there you go. Gingers don't tan. I'm red. No, it was good. I was ready to come home the last sort of day. I was getting a little bit bored, a little bit itchy.
Yeah.
But I had a good time. Produced some epic sandcastles.
No, really?
Which I was then banned from producing because then my wife spent the whole day guarding the sandcastle, making sure no horrible little brat jumped on it. Because believe it or not, the first one I made, we were sat there. I mean, literally made a sandcastle with the kids in front of the sun loungers we've got on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid just came up, looked at us, and just started stamping his foot on the sandcastle.
Oh, my gosh.
So he got told where to go.
Did you throw him in the ocean?
No, not quite. I did question on Facebook whether it was legally viable to bury a French kid in the sand upside down up to his ankles because he'd damaged his sandcastle. And the general consensus was it was completely acceptable.
Well, you'll know for next time.
So I built grade two, which was, in my own words, epic. I actually did get people stopping and looking at it.
Really?
Yeah, I made it with a broken butt and a little spade. It took me about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
And then I was banned from making any more because she said, I'm not spending my whole bloody holiday guarding your sandcastle. And then we managed to save it for the day. And then the next morning came down to see, they dragged the beaches. So every morning a tractor comes along, towing literally like a rake behind it and levels all the beach and flattens it all out. So. I came down the next morning to witness the tractor destroying my castle, which was traumatic. But just a nice switch off, do nothing sort of holiday. Unfortunately, I did come back to an absolute mountain of work.
Oh, I bet, man. Yeah. That's the thing. Like if you work for someone else and you punch a clock, you leave, you're done, you come back, you do your thing again. But yeah, when you're the only guy who's running the entire show, nothing gets done when you're away.
No, I mean, I tried to keep sort of touch with clients, so I wasn't too behind in that, but it still took me a couple of 14-hour days to catch up there. But the more corporate stuff, I mean, even now, I came back, completely forgotten how to do a BTN Academy presentation the next day.
Oh, what is this?
Ben Coomber, I don't know if he's known to yourself. He's quite well known over here, has a PT training, online training academy.
Okay, interesting.
But his course is the only one I'm aware of that actually covers steroid use, recreational steroid use.
Wow. Yeah, we don't have anything like that here.
So you sign up, you get your book and your pack, and then you can log into instructor seminars online.
Okay.
So I do the presentation for the steroid one. And I mean, you don't have to log into it live. You can always watch a recording of it as well at your own time. So that's the basis around it.
Okay.
So I completely forgot. So I got back late Tuesday night, and then Wednesday morning I had to jump on and do this presentation, and it was a bit like, ooh, I didn't even know where I was, what day it was, what week it was, or anything, but we managed to drag our ass through it.
And you were tan, so you looked good on camera.
Yeah, so at least I looked good, I must admit, yes. And then it just captured up with corporate stuff, so I had probably about a dozen blood result works to go through and various other bits, and then I got an email just before I left to tell me that I used to do steroid supplement misuse awareness presentations for the MOD.
What's the MOD?
Ministry of Defense, sorry.
Oh, okay. Wow. So that's your military. That's your army.
Yes. Well, we did the army, the RAF, and the Navy, but the Navy said they don't have a drug problem. So we generally did the military and a little bit of RAF.
Okay. I guess they don't use gear in the Navy.
No. Oh, yeah, long story there. But we won't go into that one just now. That's for another day. Okay. There's a story called The Ship of Shame.
Oh.
Where that many failed the drug test when they had shore leave and were locked in the brig. They didn't have enough staff to sail the boat back.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
That contract restarts, which will mean I'll be back out on the road presenting to various military bases. But we also... go over to Cyprus, we go into Germany, Northern Ireland, Falklands. So you get around a bit with that one. Gibraltar is a good one as well for that job.
Let me ask you something. So you're presenting in front of groups of people. Afterward, do you get guys coming up to you that are like, hey, what do you think about DECA? Stuff like that?
You get the odd one. Obviously, it's a bit clandestine because the military does not allow usage. And if you are caught, previously the rules were if you were caught you were thrown out.
Okay.
Due to poor morale and various other issues and poor recruitment levels, the British Army is struggling for numbers.
Oh, so they're what, they're turning a little more of a blind eye now?
Quite literally, yes.
Okay.
Quite literally, yes. I know of cases where squaddies have contacted me because they've been caught, and obviously they've kept me in touch with what's been happening, and they've just blatantly said the case has been dropped.
Oh, wow.
And it's very, when testing was full blown, so when the military's backed off on testing quite a lot, but when testing was full blown, they'd get somewhere in the region of around 600 or so failures a year. The vast majority of them were cocaine, but there were other substances, weed and a bit of ketamine, and sometimes prescription drugs fell into there as well.
Okay.
And they were getting roughly 100 to 150 steroid failures.
Oh, so they actually test for anabolics there?
Yes. Well, yeah, this is how it works. The department's called CDT, and they do random blood urine testing. Now, it's supposed to be completely randomized. Of the test samples that are taken, only certain ones are tested. And then of those test samples that are taken, only a small percentage are tested for steroids. There is some influencing factors, i.e. if his commanding officer has suspicions, then he can specifically request not an individual, but he can request a group to be tested. But roughly, steroid testing would probably be single-digit percentage of overall testing. And yet they were 25% of the failure rate.
Oh, wow.
When the program stopped, steroid testing was down to about 12, 15 failures a year. But their testing frequency had dropped ridiculously low. And initially it was, if you failed, you were gone. There was no second chances. There was no arguing your case. You were done. You were out the door.
Yeah. I think that's the way it is here too. I'm not 100% sure.
Right. When they finished the contract, I was hearing of guys that literally were failing and just nothing was being done about it. Because they were so low on numbers, they couldn't afford to lose any more staff.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what's changed. I know there's been a little bit of bad press, particularly around alcohol and squaddies. But I don't know what's actually changed and why they've come back to doing this. But they're restarting it anyway, so I'm just waiting for the first series of bookings to come in.
Mm. That's interesting, man. That'd be fun. That'd be cool. It's, you get to connect to people. That's different than like us doing a podcast or you doing your videos over at your YouTube page. You know, you get to directly connect to people. I just texted somebody to ask about our laws here, and they said yes, you could potentially get kicked out of the military here in the US if you were caught using steroids or other drugs, but you would probably first get demoted and then be put on probation. That would be
ironic thing is that not now, because the legal status of pro hormones in the States has changed, but in the Afghan and Iraq wars, the American PXs on base were selling pro hormones.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But that was legal, right?
The American squaddies, though they were not allowed to take steroids, were allowed to take pro hormones. So it's like, I got a minute, there's a problem here.
Yeah, that's funny. And if you,
a lot of UK guys were testing and failing on pro hormones.
Okay. And also, just to add to that, if you get caught with steroids, that is a crime. And in the US, you will get kicked out.
Yeah, because that's possession is illegal in the US, where it's not in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Oh, that's cool, man. And you know, in other news, I saw you put out a thread on social media saying that you were going to start taking some new clients. How's that going for you?
Yeah, good response. I mean, you always do. I always tend to find that if I do advertise, I'm taking clients on board. I'll get a good response, but that will probably only convert, you know, 20-25%, whatever it is. Some people just because they're not aware of the costs or it's just not right for them. But no, it's been a good intake, actually. It's definitely brought the numbers back up. I'd let the numbers drop somewhat. And because I don't do contest prep, people tend not to be as committed.
Mm.
So they'll drop in and out, and they'll come, they'll do 2-3 months, and then they'll be comfortable, happy where they are, happy with the look, and they'll say, all right, I'm fine now, see you later. Mm-hmm. 3 months later of not sticking to it, they'll come back, fat and small again, can you sort me back out? You know?
Do you get frustrated with that? You know, because you want to see everybody reach their goals.
I've had clients that had all the potential in the world in regards to what they could physically achieve, but either just didn't have the work ethic or just didn't have the desire. And I sometimes get in conflict with clients that will push me for, because ironically as it is due to my own history, but I'm actually a very low dose advocate when it comes to clients, and very much a hard work advocate when it comes to clients. And because of my past, some clients will come expecting big, huge cycles and think this is in the drugs. And I've had a couple of clients I've got into arguments with over drug use. And it is conflicting sometimes when you've got a client that's pushing to use more and more drugs.
Yeah.
And you're trying to hold them back and improve the work ethic and improve the training ethic and improve the diet ethic. And you get them and they'll start, and it was within a 2 week, oh, I'm struggling with the food. Can I just replace that one with a shake?
Yeah.
Oh, can I just replace that with a protein? And straight away you start thinking, you know, this person's not really got the correct work ethic for what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, the way I boil those questions down is, can I get away with this? What more can I get away with?
Yeah, and then you'll start seeing, oh, well, my mate's using this. I mean, I had one message me last week who said, oh, my mate's on this cycle and he's grown massive. I'd like to do the same cycle. I said, what's the cycle? It was 4.5 gram.
Oh, yeah, he's growing then. There's, yeah, you know,
it was, you know, 2 gram of equipoise a week, 1 gram of tren, a gram and a half of test. And I'm like, yeah, you'll grow. A fucking house brick will grow on that.
Yeah.
I'd hate to see his blood values after 6 weeks. But right. Oh, this was a 6 month course at these doses.
Wow. Wow.
And so we had a discussion and we ended up coming to a compromise. But I get into this little bit of a quandary. And it's like, right, do I tell them to piss off? Which is one, and I'll be honest about this, a lot wouldn't, and would say, oh, no, it's all because of the moral. Listen, is it bollocks? I'm doing myself out of money. But also, there is the genuine of, if I send them on the way, they're going to do this whatever.
Exactly.
So if I keep in, I don't lose the money, which is definitely a playing factor in here, but also I can still manage what they do, and I can make sure at least the right tests are in place at the right time, and that the, you know, I can check for side effects. Are you experiencing this? Are you experiencing that? And we can look at the early warning signs a lot more effectively, if at least if I'm still there. So I do have a little bit of conflict there of what do I do? Do I get rid of them? Do I keep them? I'm quite honest.
I mean, I think you do this because you're passionate about helping people, first of all. And second of all, I think you know, even if he doesn't want to follow your thoughts 100%, doesn't agree with you yet, he may, you know, down the road, you may get through to him. I like the idea of keeping him around. You know, I think the way like a therapist would work with a drug addict or an alcoholic, just because that person isn't, you know, discontinuing using the drug or the alcohol, the therapist will keep seeing them and talking to them and keeping that dialogue open. And over time, that person may, you know, find the understanding they need to say, oh, hey, yeah, maybe Dave was right about this. You know,
when you know, it's funny you mention that, because I'm finding myself more and more pulled into situations with people that have an unhealthy relationship with their usage and have elements of dependency. And I had worked with a guy who had some dependency issues and a lot of body dysmorphic issues, and he'd had a lot of issues in the past with anorexia and bulimia and just a lot of issues around accepting himself for who he was. And we did a prep. It was a very rare occasion I actually did a full prep with a client, and he didn't make stage through no fault of his own. He was definitely ready, but work commitments and stuff caused some issues. But he came out of it very accepting of who he was, with a lot healthier approach to his body image, a lot healthier approach to his drug usage, and we became quite good friends. And I find I'm starting to do a little bit more of that, which is, it's always a little bit, because it's not a field that I'm trained in any way. Well, I suppose I'm not really trained in any field, to be honest, but so it's very much an experience, life experience base that I come from when I talk to people with problems like this. But he recently contacted me this week and asked me to speak to his brother who's had a cocaine habit.
Wow.
And it had become quite problematic, and it had got to a point where the family was literally sort of tearing itself apart. And I found myself mentoring his brother a little bit now, which is scary, if I'm honest, you know, because it's definitely a field. I know the scientific side of it. I've done research into Coke's effects, and obviously the addictive, and that side of things is pretty standard across the board when it comes to the driving factors behind drug use. That's proving challenging.
Let me ask you this. Is it a fair statement to say steroids are not addictive?
No.
Why is that?
Okay. I'm going to pose you a question now, and if you can, and I mean this in all sincerity, answer it as honestly as possible. You're no longer allowed to use steroids. What's your first response?
I would be depressed. I would think, you know, I won't be able to make the kind of progress that I want to make in the future. I would think maybe I won't be as strong as I had been in the past. You know, I would have to totally reset my whole goals. You know, really, that's the way. That's like my first thought. That's what I would think. Yeah, sure.
Element of fear.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Element of loss?
Absolutely.
Now start thinking about whether steroids are addictive or not.
So you're talking about the psychological side.
Yeah, it's now. There is evidence as well to show that there is an element of addiction. Addiction, I suppose it really depends on how you describe and define addiction. To me, addiction is the requirement, the need to do something.
Yeah.
Be it drug or an action.
Yes.
And what I'm now, there are two ways in steroids affect our perception psychologically. They affect the neurochemistry within the brain. And there's a lot of evidence coming out now, stuff like body dysmorphia is definitely worsened with usage, but through what mechanism entirely is, and it seems to be a mixture of a chemical mechanism and a psychological mechanism due to exposure and experience. At the end of the day, nobody likes going backwards.
Right.
And you see this in professional athletes, that when they leave being number one, number two, number three in the world in their sport, they really struggle mentally to do anything else. Because when you've been in the top three in the world at what you do, being Mr. Jones that lives down the street, sort of doesn't cut it.
No, absolutely not.
And a lot will go into presenting or coach or some way to still stay involved and be regarded as an opinion and a force in the field in which they're in.
Yeah.
So if you're 240 pounds shredded, and you even see these people post comp, they struggle to come out of condition.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there are so many factors within the bodybuilding lifestyle that can become, for want of a better term, addictive.
Yeah.
So you've got a couple of things going on. You do have some chemical process in the brain, particularly around anxiety and depression, that can cause withdrawal when the drugs are removed.
Hmm.
But the biggest influence factor is the psychological drivers that I'm going to get small, particularly from guys that are staunch blast cruisers.
Hmm.
They don't come off because they fear a loss of size if they do.
Yeah.
And you tend to find these guys are the ones that cruise at 300 and 400 meg a week. They have a fear. And for people that have got into usage because of poor body image, or off the back of bullying and those sort of things, what you also find is that their confidence is very much linked to the physical appearance, and their physical appearance is very much linked to the drug use.
Hmm.
So in short, you remove the drugs, you remove their confidence. And they genuinely do feel that they are no longer an entity, they are no longer a person, they have no value, no quality, you know, if they lose their size.
Hmm.
And their gut reaction is, if I stop drugs, I lose size, I become nobody.
Wow. Yeah, I could see that.
So, yeah, I do believe there is. And I've spoke to numerous people over the years that quite literally just can't come off. Irrespective of whether they can or not hormonally, they can't mentally bring themselves to coming off.
You know, too, you mentioned the word hormonally. Now, maybe this is a little bit of a stretch, but stick with me here for a second. So, you know, we look at, we'll take opiate addiction, we'll say heroin addiction. And when you become addicted to that, your body is no longer producing the endorphins it once was. And you're dependent on this drug to not only get you high, but just to feel okay and to feel well and to feel normal. Because your body's produced all these receptors now to suck up all these endorphins that you're exogenously introducing. And that's what the withdrawal is when you come off. What about, I mean, steroids? You're no longer producing. What's the difference? You're no longer producing testosterone when you come off. You're having a negative effect. You know, you feel crappy. I could almost go as far as to say that's a physical addiction. You now require that in order to feel normal.
And there is elements there of a medical necessity because of the damage usage is done to your natural endocrine system. So, but you could argue, I think you could argue that particularly if people run above TRT doses.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the other thing you tend to find is that when people have invested huge, and I mean sometimes huge amounts of money into their physique and time and effort and sacrifice,
yeah,
it's very difficult to let that go.
Sure.
If you'd spent 12 years building something, And then you were told, right, it's going to be taken away from you now. There's obviously that element of, well, that 12 years was a waste.
Yeah.
And I tend, not all, I must admit, but I do also see people that get so lost in developing the physique that they stop developing themselves. And drugs have become a support mechanism or a gap filler for something else, or training has.
Yeah.
You see this more, so you see this very common in recreational weed smokers, where they have issues coping with something, be it anxiety or life stresses or whatever it is. And this is particularly prevalent with people that start smoking sort of at the ages of 11, 12, 13. And they never develop coping mechanisms because their coping mechanism has been to have a joint. And in the same way, you get people whose coping mechanisms is to have a drink or have a cigarette or whatever the chemical may be. You get people in our world whose coping mechanism is to go to the gym.
Yeah.
And when that's removed from them, they don't have coping mechanisms to deal with life stresses.
Absolutely.
And life isn't what Facebook tells you. It's not great, wonderful, and fantastic. It can be really shitty at times.
Yeah.
And it is perfectly normal to feel like crap, and it is perfectly normal to feel really low, and it is perfectly normal to hate Mondays, hate your boss, hate your kids, hate your wife, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
As long as they're not permanent states, then it's, you know, normally quite normal. But we're told continuously by social media and all the bullshit that you get on there that this isn't normal, and we're supposed to be happy, and we're supposed to have six packs all year round, and our lives are supposed to be wonderful, and we're supposed to be the best parents in the world that spend every weekend devoted to our children. Do I, bollocks? If I can get them to stay in the rooms playing on the PlayStations, great. Free weekend for me.
Yeah.
Not quite literally that bad, but I'm being flippant, but you get my point that, you know, we get given this false set of standards that we're supposed to live up to. And when we can't live up to it, we feel we fail. And that pushes drives in all sort of ways. And that's definitely a driving factor into physique world and into usage, because people are trying to, particularly non-competitive users, because people are trying to attain a certain physique that they feel is necessary to be successful. You get these drivers in finance and business and all sorts. You know, and I've got a couple of friends that have been quite successful in business. And I always looked at not, I wouldn't say envy is the wrong word. It's way too strong a word. But you're looking, which, you know what, really pleased for you, mate. You've done really well. Wouldn't mind being there myself.
Yeah.
And he's like, you have no idea. He says, because you get to a certain point, and the particular person I was talking to is a multimillionaire. And he's not overly flash with it either, to be honest. He's quite careful with his money and quite subtle. He says, and then you step out of that pond into the lake where you start to see people who make money. And you just realize, shit, I'm nowhere near. I'm literally nowhere near that level of success.
It sounds like a lot like bodybuilding to me.
Yeah, you go from amateur to national, from national to pro. And he says, but the thing is, the trick is to realize that also that isn't a measure of who you are. You know, your success isn't measured by the size of your biceps or the quality of your abs, and it's not measured by your bank balance. Your success is actually measured by you as an individual. And it said, unfortunately, we all spend time in life chasing physiques or chasing money or chasing careers or chasing girls or chasing reputations, when what we should really be doing is investing our time in ourselves, in bettering ourselves as people, in our understanding and our knowledge. And he says, we don't. And that's why we fail as a human race, was his punchline on all that. But he had a very valid point, I felt.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think we could all learn from that. Well, hey, we're going a little long here on our first segment. What do you say we take a quick break and come back and answer some questions?
Yeah, because we're getting very deep and we can't be doing that.
Right? All right, guys, we'll be right back in a second.
I can't stop.
Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to take this break and give some credit where credit is due. He didn't ask me to do this commercial, but I am doing it. And that's because I'm grateful. So thank you, Dave Crossland. Thank you for your contribution here at Advices Radio. And thank you for your contribution to bodybuilding as a whole. Guys, you can check out more of Dave over at his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professionals, as well as advising individual users. And be sure to check out his YouTube page. It's at UC The Freak. That's the letter U, the letter C, The Freak. So you can't miss him there. The guy's all over YouTube. All right, guys, we will get back to the program in just a moment. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and we've got a bunch of questions. We also have, Dave, we've got our, well, this is now our second love and relationship question for the Ask Dave. Is it Ask Davey? Is that what we're calling it?
I think so, yeah. I think okay. That's what we said. Dear Davey.
Dear Davey. That's it. We'll get to Dear Davey in just a little bit for our love and relationship advice segment. But for starters, we're gonna dive right into the bodybuilding stuff. So I have a thread that we posted at the release of last episode. If we work through all these questions, then I will post another thread at the release of the next episode. And you guys can keep populating those threads with your questions and we will get through them. If we do happen to miss a question and it was important to you, because there's a lot of them coming in, just go ahead, feel free to repost that in the next thread. I apologize. We want to get to everybody's stuff. I'm going to start up over at the forum. That's forum.advicesradio.com. We have a thread up at the top of the bodybuilding section called Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland question thread. So we got that there. And also, we have his website, which is crosslands.org.uk, and a link to the YouTube page. So check out all of his videos and stuff. Our first question is from Wrought Iron 66. He says, can you ask Dave what he thinks about Monday, Wednesday, Friday HGH protocol? Paul Peace Garb seems to like it. Really for anti-aging and not really muscle building in my case. Do you like every day, every other day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, five on, two off? And he also adds, great show, keep them coming. And he says, oh yeah, here are some stats. I'm 52, 5'6", 200 pounds, training since 1978, so 40 years. Only jumped on TRT when he hit 50 2 years ago, and he trained natty for 31 years until he tried some pro hormones in 2009. Didn't really like the feeling while on those, and bloods went to shit. But I feel great on TRT. He's on 75 milligrams every 5 days. And he's got a profile picture on here too. He's definitely got a decent amount of muscle built.
Yeah, I mean, with growth, I'm a EOD or Monday, Wednesday, Friday sort of guy. I don't like the everyday blocks or the five on, two off. Main issues being the insulin resistance side of things. So I'm a great, but then I'm not a fan of growth for muscular growth anyway.
Yeah,
I think as a recovery aid and a general youth supporting or health supporting compound, low dose EOD is definitely the way to go.
Okay, now if, say, a guy were running, we'll say on average, if somebody wants to do like a low dose, they say take 2 to 3 units a day, and commonly it's done 5 days on, 2 days off. Would you take your weekly total and then split that up into every other day? Or would you keep the dose the same and run that every other day?
Dose-wise is very much dependent on quality of the GH you're getting.
Ah.
But I would generally aim for 1 to 2 IU every other day. If you're running a generic, you might push that up to 3 to 4. But, yeah, I mean, people that have previously done 2 IU every day, I have suggested that they do 3 IU every other day.
Okay.
And approached it that way. It's a bit of a balancing act. I mean, you want a dose that has an impact, but obviously you want a dose that doesn't cause water retention and doesn't cause the other issues associated with growth hormone use. So a lot of that comes down to the quality of the growth you're using, and unfortunately that's the bit that we struggle with. And I know a lot of people blood tests so long after administrating growth, and it will give you an indication, but there are factors that will affect that, particularly when it comes to insulin levels or if you've eaten food within that period.
Okay.
Because a spike in insulin will blunt the GH response. So this is where timing with growth hormone is very, very essential, and you need to keep food away from it. And for the benefit side of it, I mean, if you wanted to be ultra, ultra technical, you'd probably be looking at 3/4 to 1 IU of growth pulsed throughout the day at several occasions. But for the benefit you're going to get against the cost and the complexity, I'd just go 2-3 IU pre-bed every other day.
Okay.
Because for the amount of complexity it's going to put into your life against the benefit you're going to get from being so hypercritical with it, I just don't think it's personally worth it.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, and not to mention, it sounds like you probably save some money with that too. I've known guys that are running a ton, you know.
I've run 28 IU a farmer a day.
I remember the first time I interviewed you, you were telling me about that. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, how does he afford this?
Good prices. UC1 paid for that.
Nice.
But the bottom line was, you know what? I didn't really see that much of any discernible benefit. And yet when I've run low dose every other day for a long period of times, I've seen massive benefit. Not particularly muscular-wise, but improvements in condition and well-being and general health and sleep and all those sort of things.
Do you think that you could get just as good of an effect off of a high-quality generic as you can off of a farm grade?
Yeah, to a degree. I think the only downside of them is the potential for a slight immune response type situation. It's quite common. People quite often report off generics that they'll get a small rash developing at the injection points.
Oh, yeah.
Now, usually antihistamines will clear that, or just prolonged use will clear that. But that is a common problem with the generics that you don't get with you don't generally get with the farmers.
Okay.
But the counterfeit pharma market is so difficult to navigate. To some degree, there are certain brands that are classed as generic that I would personally, that are actually manufactured in pharmaceutical establishments that can be bought direct from the pharmaceutical establishment. They're not classed on a level of Lilly or those pharma grades, but they're a bit up above the generics. And that would be my way to go. I'd always go for something like Ansonem or something like that, because I know I can buy it direct from the lab that produces it.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I know I'm getting the quality of product. I know I'm getting a genuine article. It's not quite as high grade as European pharma. No, it's not. But it's a step above the generics, and it's consistent.
All right. Next question. This is from Longstrin1. He says, "Hi, guys. Love the new show. Figured I'd fire a question here as well. This is probably very generic and person-dependent, I know, but wonder if you could talk about peak week training. how would you set up training for the last 7 days prior to a show? How would you go about training, train as usual, no reps till failure, circuit training? Would you want to stop training legs, pole cardio, etc.? You probably could talk about this for hours, but would appreciate if you could talk what you generally would work to do with your clients. Thanks.
Well, I don't do that many prep clients, so that's probably more a question for you than me.
Okay. And you know what the answer is? It's probably similar to an answer you would have in any case, Dave. It depends, right? It depends. I
mean, if you're doing a carb load, I would not be putting anyone through, in my personal opinion, I wouldn't be using a great deal of workout.
Yeah.
Because the carb load's supposed to bring carbs into the muscle, and you're going to be taking carbs out of the muscle by having heavy workouts at that point. But at the same time, light pumping sessions, or usually I would use posing sessions to drive carbs, help drive carbs in.
Nice.
I have a little bit of turnover, and I would just get the client doing a couple of posing sessions a day.
There you go. I've tried to, one thing I would say is I've had people discontinue legs early on. And if they're lean enough, then we'll cut cardio out even well before we could. Let's take a best case scenario. You're ready at 3 weeks out. Then we'll pull cardio at 3 weeks out too and give your legs the break. If you're not ready, if you're still holding fat, then we may go all the way up through Thursday, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is that element as well, isn't there? If you're fat, then you're fat. It's as simple as that.
Right, so right. Stop
cardio or anything is going to change anything.
Yeah, that's true. And some people, you know, maybe nothing changes. And for other people, maybe after the leg day, a week out, say, then a full upper body depletion workout for the first, like, you know, if we compete on Saturday, as all the NPC shows are, then say Saturday before that is legs, and then maybe Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, a depletion workout, and then we begin loading carbs after that. Or maybe nothing changes at all. So it is person dependent, but I don't think it's going to be a make or break you thing either. I think the key is if anything, be ready early and then do less as you get closer. Give your body the rest. I think that having a nice rested look is going to do a lot more for you than beating your body up, you know, coming into the show.
Overly stressed, you're going to hold water as well.
Yeah, yeah. And look flat and just, yeah, all sorts of nasty stuff.
I mean, I think the key is you need to try different approaches early on in your career and use them as learning steps to sort of fine tune what works for you.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is that does change as you get older or get bigger and smaller.
True. All right. I'll move forward. This is from, this is our third question over at the forum and our last one at the forum. Then we'll go to the Instagram stuff. We've got Devin68691. I've been blasting and cruising for 3 years. Blast consists of D-ball, 100 milligrams per day, Sustadon, 350 milligrams per week, and Tren, 500 milligrams per week. I run my D-ball during the first 4 weeks and the last 4 weeks of my blast. Blast lasts 12 weeks, and I cruise at 375 test per week for 12 weeks. I am on 20 milligrams of Cialis per day, underground, not RX. I am a power lifter who could give a shit less about a six-pack. I have ate the same thing for six meals a day for the past 3 years, chicken, beef, rice, and green beans. I cheat on Saturday and with highly processed carbs, moderate protein, low-fat meals. I run a four-week lifting cycle, max out the big three every week. He explains a little bit more about his training, and that's his background. He says, up until the last cycle, bloods had been good and life had been great. I finished up the last cycle, waited 4 weeks to get bloods. LDL was through the roof at 249 with my HDL looking spot on and my overall looking good. I was told to come back. Or I was told to come completely off gear, test everything 4 weeks later, and not go back on TRT until my cholesterol was back down to normal. According to my coach, he has seen this, and the TRT dose is just not allowing my bad cholesterol to come down. What are your thoughts on this, Dave?
Well, It's not a TRT dose would be my first thought. TRT is literally, even in a blast flu scenario, as far as I'm concerned, some people argue this slightly differently, but to me, in a blast crew scenario, the reason for running blast crews is because you're not going through PCT because you feel that this is pointless when you're only going to shut yourself back down again to go on a further cycle. And the TRT element of a blast cruise, or the cruise element of a blast cruise, should I say, should mimic natural levels. Now, even in genuine TRT patient, cholesterol management is an issue. And the reason behind this is that the raw material for your body to produce hormones is cholesterol. If you're not using that raw material, you're going to end up with more of it hanging about.
Oh, wow.
Which is why all steroids increase LDL.
Interesting.
But particularly really only orals decrease HDL. And certain Arimidex and letrozole also decrease HDL as well. So I'd be a little bit concerned about, I find it difficult to believe that at 3 years of not going below 375 megatest a week, that his red blood cell values are all correct. Now, what I find with a lot of users is that they discount certain values as being normal for a bodybuilder. So it may well be that they are, and he may just be an incredibly lucky person, but I would expect to see his red blood cell, hematocrit, those sort of things, elevated.
Okay.
But yes, his coach is right that it is the continuous use that is causing the LDL to remain elevated. However, I'll be shocked if he can recover after 3 years of being shut down or recover easily. So a PCT is probably going to be quite a traumatic experience. It's worth a shot, and he may not. It's worth a shot, but if he's been cycling, training every blast he's done, then they're quite suppressive drugs, and the chances are he's not going to make a full recovery, at least first time round on a PCT anyway. I would look at improving diet. I'd look at increasing healthy fats. And I'd look at bringing that TRT at least down to a more correct level. If he wants to give the PCT a try, Godspeed to him, and hopefully he'll get some good results off it, but he may find he has to repeat it a couple of times. Otherwise, you're looking at whatever you can do to scrub that LDL, and the main way is usually to increase HDL even higher. Bearing in mind, there are several types of LDL, and not all are bad. But without some very in-depth testing, he won't be able to know which ones he's got and how high they are. So you really got to just base it on what you've got. And the way would be to improve diet at a weekend, improve cardiovascular output, improve HDL levels, probably look at applying something like citrus bergamot, also look at very high, very pure vitamin C dosing. And then reduce, if a PCT is unsuccessful, then reducing his TRT dosing so that it is at least bringing him to mid upper range of natural levels of test and not any higher.
Okay. He's got a second one here that I'll get to. It says, right now my estrogen is a little bit on the high side, but not out of range. If I come off, if I come completely off, would you suggest, what would you suggest a PCT would look like? I only have Letro for estrogen control right now. I was put on TRT by my endo 3 years ago. I have a test level of 180, had a test level of 180 at 37 and felt like shit. I have blast cruised ever since.
Right. Well, then we know why he's blast cruised, because at the end of the day, he has already got damaged natural production. So it would be very unlikely that PCT is going to be successful.
Okay.
If he was to run one, it would have to be extremely aggressive. You'd be looking at Dr. Scalise with a couple of other things thrown in. Letrozole has no place in estrogen management unless you're about to step on stage or you have severe gyno. That drug should be not in your arsenal at all, as far as I'm concerned. It is 96% efficient at killing estrogen off. It also causes huge rebound post-usage, and it is particularly damaging to cholesterol. I would always go aromacin and another SERM as my estrogen suppression, so Novadex or Reflexin or something along those lines. So PCT wise, if he was medically diagnosed and there is not an obvious cause for that diagnosis, i.e. you haven't just done a cycle and not bothered PCTing, then the chances are he's not going to recover anyway. So it's a case of making that TRT correct based on blood results. Now, the fact that his estrogen is running up the higher end is probably what's protecting him and why his HDL is still quite decent. Estrogen has a very positive effect within the liver when it comes to cholesterol management. So, you know, the sort of worst thing you can do for cholesterol is run Tren, run Letrozole. Because you basically screw your HDL and your LDL very, very quickly. So higher estrogen will actually help support his cholesterol management and his lipid management. So I'd look at diet, and like we'd already discussed, and I really think from what he said and from what he's told us that a PCT is just not an option.
Okay. He added at the end, I want to thank Dave for UC2. It was a huge eye-opener for me.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Over at the Instagram thread that we created at the release of the last show, GW Cook 1 says, can you guys talk about all things gyno? It's pretty open-ended.
Well, I'm not quite sure. Oh, God, this is a quagmire of landmines when it comes to gyno and opinions on gyno.
Dave, tell me everything you know about gyno. You know, that's a lot to ask too, you know, but I guess the basics, you know, what have we talked about? One thing is, in the last episode we had discussed, or actually no. Yeah, it will be when this happens, it'll be the last episode. We discussed how AIs are overused. So that's one aspect. But gyno, it is a real thing. But not everybody really suffers from it. I talked to a guy who said he doesn't use any AI at all, and he's never had any symptoms of gyno whatsoever.
I've run my estrogen at, this is UK numbers, but 200, 240, 260 with no gyno, which is high. Okay. Very high.
What's the range in those numbers?
UK range, upper end, I think. God, hang on. I'll tell you exactly in a minute. Just give me 1 second.
Sure.
I should have a test sheet here with the exact numbers on. Estrogen.
So I think we're like 12, 10 to 28 or something like that.
Yeah, because obviously we run NMOL. You guys don't. You run NGDL, don't you?
Yes.
I think upper end's about 190.
And you were at what?
250 or 260.
Wow.
And that's upper end. That's not, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, put it this way, my natural levels now are 60.
Okay.
So it gives you an idea of how much elevated it was. Estrogen receptors at the nipple. Because we all start from the basic same blueprint, either male or female, we have different chromosomes, but it is actually the hormone as influences that really develop the male or female body parts. So as a male, we're born with mammary glands, same as a female. They're dormant. They don't get triggered into growth because we don't get this. We get a boost of testosterone. We don't get a boost of estrogen. So that means that we have that potential for mammary growth for all our life. Some people are more sensitive than others, but the main driving factor between gyno, which is the development of female breast tissue, is what it is high levels of estrogen. Now, selective estrogen receptor modulators, so stuff like Clomid and Novadex, block those receptors within the nipple, preventing the estrogen from being able to attach to the receptor and therefore trigger gyno. Then they're not 100% efficient, and so obviously some can still get through. When you start getting to drugs like Tren, we start to see that Tren impacts various other things. Now, DHT has a protective action at the nipple. And when DHT levels are low, then we lose that natural protective action within the nipple. In fact, DHT cream is a treatment for gyno when it naturally occurs. Tren changes the sensitivity of estrogen receptors. Therefore, the estrogen receptors within the nipple become more sensitive. So a previously okay level of estrogen that didn't cause gyno now can. Couple that with a reduction in DHT, because Tren binds quite strongly with 5-alpha reductase, which means less test gets converted to DHT.
Okay.
You get a double-edged sword there. So there's two aspects of what can cause estrogen to create gyno, and obviously a natural predisposition to it. Now, prolactin. Now, medically, high prolactin levels very, very rarely cause gyno. In fact, if you speak medically, they'll say that the only cause of gyno is estrogen. And this is something that's been replicated by a lot of people within the bodybuilding community. But I have seen people who have presented gyno. The only addition to their drug arsenal was cabergoline, and the gyno has gone. And caber suppresses prolactin. So there is definitely more going on here than we really know. And current knowledge, there's a few gray areas behind this relationship.
Yeah.
In general, if you control estrogen, you will not get gyno, but there are its potential. Now, the strange thing is that there's some interaction going on here between nandrolones and prolactin and gyno, because testosterone will elevate gyno. In fact, if you start getting people who just run testosterone only, or run test and mast, or any other cycle that doesn't contain an androlone or an O19, you will still see quite often cases of very elevated prolactin, but no gyno. But those same levels of prolactin, when androlones are introduced, and they start getting gyno symptoms at the nipple. Now, the only thing I can think is the changes here is the change in DHT. So I think there's definitely a trigger action point here around DHT levels in relationship to estrogen levels and relationship to prolactin levels. And it's the nandrolone's strong binding affinity that causes the lowering of 5-alpha reductase, which then in turn causes the lowering of DHT, that makes prolactin action at the nipple more prominent. But I haven't found anything that medically proves that. A lot of people will claim gyno when they haven't got gyno. Now what I mean by that is, because when the receptor is initially triggered, the gland will swell. That isn't gyno as such. Gynomastia is the formation of female breast tissue. What you have is an inflammation of the tissue, not the formation of the tissue. And that's the difference, because if gyno is fully formed, it's breast tissue, which means your only real option then is surgery. If you reduce your gyno with estrogen or anti-estrogens and you didn't have full-blown gyno, you had the precursor, which was the inflammation of the tissue. That would become tissue growth in time, but it isn't in its initial stages.
That makes sense.
And that's trying to keep it as concise as I can without going down loads of different avenues. I've done a couple of videos on my website that are literally 45 minutes an hour long just on gyno and prolactin.
All right. In that case, I suggest that he goes and checks those out. And like I said, we've got the link to Dave's YouTube in our show notes on every episode and at the Advices Radio page. So you can just search Dave Crossland at YouTube. That he's all over the place over there, so you'll find that stuff. Let's lighten it up a little bit. Let's go do a little bit of Dear Davey. How's that sound?
That sounds good to me.
Now, we had a couple submissions. We're going to go with Urich 17. And this, he asks about, this is relating to marriage, but we could also say just relationships in general. He says, what is the key to a happy marriage? What's one of the toughest experiences you've had for stress on your marriage, and how did you deal with it? And also, I'm going to add that Urich 17 wins an Advices Radio t-shirt, because we are giving away a shirt on every show for your best relationship question, and you, Rich, we picked yours today. Dave, what says you on this one?
Honesty.
Hmm.
But this is where I find a lot of people sometimes can go astray. Honesty might reveal that you're not actually with the right person.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're truly honest with your partner, and your partner is truly honest with you, you might not actually like what you hear.
Mm.
Which means the person isn't the right one for you. And you're with each other because you've lied.
Mm.
Because you haven't been true to yourself, you haven't been true to them. So they haven't actually got to know the real you. They've got to know the false pretend facade of you. Over time, that starts to create friction. Where if you are truly honest with your partner, then you are truly you and they are with you because of the person you really are.
Hmm, I get it.
Difficult and quite often difficult to accept that a relationship that you may have invested a long time in isn't actually correct. Or right for you. But I've always found that the hardest and yet almost at the same time the easiest element to a relationship is being honest.
Hmm.
It's hard because it's scary, particularly if you weren't honest at the beginning of the relationship, because it means you've started to sort of got to start to go back on things.
Hmm.
But if you're honest at the beginning of the relationship, then you set your stall out from day one.
Yeah.
And the person knows what they're getting into. Now, as long as they're honest about what they feel about that, then I don't think you go far wrong. You know, no relationship comes without arguments, comes without disagreements, comes without discussion. That's the nature of human beings living in close proximity to each other. But the key is if you are open with each other and can discuss these things honestly, and you can express your feelings honestly, then you can work through it. You know, if your wife or your partner or your husband or your dog or whatever it is does something that annoys you every day, if you don't tell them, they will do it every day.
Yeah.
And eventually that can become a major problem.
Hmm.
Well, if you say, I'm sorry, but that really annoys me, they might say, well, I'm not going to stop doing it. But they might say, but I'll make sure I do it when you're not here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, any relationship is about a bit of give and take. And if it's all one-sided, then it's always doomed to fail one way or the other. So, you know, there will be evidence. My wife can't stand my choice in music.
Really? What do you like?
Drum and bass.
No kidding. Right on. Yeah.
She's a Meatloaf and Queen fan.
Okay.
I can't stand Meatloaf and Queen.
I can get with some Queen, but I can't do the Meatloaf. That's not my thing.
So the radio isn't played in the car.
Okay.
We talk. Then there's no arguments over music.
Hmm.
So it's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be an element of compromise. And you've just got to be open and honest and realistic about that. You know, there's things that I do that I don't particularly enjoy for her. And there's things that she does that she doesn't particularly enjoy for me.
Hmm.
But there's also areas where we don't try and force. I don't force my training onto her. I don't force my lifestyle onto her. I don't try and encourage her to go to the gym. If she wants to go, she goes. If she doesn't, she doesn't go. Hmm. Because why should she live my life?
Yeah.
But you get a lot of partners that will try and force their other half into enjoying what they enjoy. When we both love each other's company, love each other dearly, but we also love each other, love time apart.
Yeah.
I took the kids to a bonfire last night. She stayed at home. She just had a bath, glass of wine, pampered herself a little bit, really enjoyed the downtime, having the house to herself and not having to bother about the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it swings and roundabouts. Regards the most stressful time on my relationship, my ex-wife was extremely stressful on my relationship, but that's a very long and complex story that I really couldn't get. I'm not bothered about getting into it, but it just, it's not going to fit in our time scale.
Yeah.
I said that the singular thing or the was UC2. That was extremely testing on our relationship on lots of levels. She didn't like the camera intrusion. She didn't like the physical aspect of me. She didn't like the impact of me eating had on us as a family. She didn't like the stop it and stare element that it attracted when we went out. So much so to the point that she started to just say she didn't want to go anywhere.
Oh, wow.
She didn't tell me why. She just said, no, I don't fancy it. She made excuses, but she didn't want to go. And we didn't deal with the severity of the impact of the problem at the time, but she has told me about it since. You know, and there was, she put up with a lot for that, which is why I don't do anything of that nature anymore. You know, because I've had my time, and she supported me in that time, was very selfish. Because ultimately, if you're going to do anything in this sport and you're going to do it well, it's going to be selfish. But yeah, I do think any relationship, the key is honesty. But it's also recognizing that sometimes you might not actually be with the right person in the first place. Some people work having arguments. Some people work in disruption. I have a friend and him and his missus, I don't think they go a week without throwing a bottle or a pizza or a door or a cup or a plate or something at each other.
Oh, good. I'm glad and I don't live next door to them.
But that's just how they are. They're both very fiery. But the thing is, they're fiery anyway. They're fiery outside of that relationship. And if you put that in another relationship, it wouldn't work. It works because they both challenge each other a lot. And they've both got personalities where they would dominate a person if they weren't challenging. And then they'd be bored because that person offered them no challenge. So, you know, it's knowing what makes you tick and being honest with yourself about what you want out of a relationship. And then looking at being honest with your partner as well so that you both get, because relationships work when they're balanced. They don't work when they're one-sided.
Absolutely.
They might work for you because it's all going in your favor, but they're definitely not working for the other person.
Yeah.
And if you want to be happy in a relationship, happy wife, happy life. So, yeah, I'd say honesty is the key. In fact, personally, I think honesty is the key to a balanced and successful life. We've got very deep this week.
Right. Tell me about it, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think it's good. I think so. We'll find out. We'll hear.
I think it's just because I'm so chilled after holiday.
Hey, you said the word.
You
did holiday. That's our word. I forgot to work it in yet, but you managed to. But it wasn't, I don't know if it counts if you say it, because like for you.
It was a fluke anyway. It was definitely not by design.
All right.
In more complex words though.
More complex words. We'll have to work on that.
Stuff like, I don't know. Oh, I'll think of something.
Okay. But do you mean just like a big vocab word like cantankerous or something?
No, I mean like more. Well, we could either go very English words like wanker.
Yeah, that's very English.
Or we could go very obscure words.
Okay.
Like chuff chuff bezwack.
Like what?
Chuff chuff bezwack.
I don't even know what that is.
Nobody does. I was told many years ago whether this is true or not, but I had a lot of mates from Barnsley in that area.
Yeah.
And they used it quite a lot. And apparently it was a statement of pleasure.
Huh.
But I don't. I mean, chuffed is probably an English word. I don't know. Is that a word you use in the States?
I've never heard that word.
Chuffed is to be happy.
Chuffed. I'm chuffed at
pleased about something. I'm chuffed about something. I'm pleased about it.
Okay, yeah.
So I think of more of these words or yes, I'll have a thought.
All right. Well, you, Rich, send me a private message with your address and your shirt size, and we will get one sent out to you ASAP. We'll go to Rob Holloway, 83, here next. He has a question about protein. He says, how many grams of protein does Dave recommend for an off season? Does a high protein intake put excess stress on the kidneys apart from, what is this word? Astralaris? Any support supplements you recommend for kidney health? What's Astralagus?
It's a supplement.
What is it? Really? I don't know that one.
It's a supplement. With regards to protein intake, I'm not aware of any research that shows that high-level protein causes kidney damage. But what I am aware of is that a damaged kidney will struggle with high protein levels.
Mm.
And the reason the medical community is so against protein is because protein levels is one of the markers that they use to measure kidney function and creatine. And if that's elevated, it throws those results out the window a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do think generally we tend to overcompensate with our protein intake, and I don't think it needs to be quite as high as it needs to be. But it does depend on the rest of the structure of your diet as well. And so if you're running a diet that's medium carbs, medium protein, low fats, you're going to need more protein than if you run a diet that's high carb. So there is a change in protein requirements depending on the carb element of your diet.
Okay.
Very high carb diets will require less protein. More protein will be used as an energy source in a medium to low carb diet environment. And we will drop in and out of using protein as an energy source as and when we need to during the day. So it's not like a keto state where you go into it and you stay there and all the rest of it. Generally, I sort of aim for a gram to a gram and a half per pound as a base.
Now, is that per pound of body weight or per pound of lean mass?
Per pound of body weight.
Okay.
Unless you are very, very fat.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
And then I will adjust that by trial and error more than anything. So if I was going to start pushing for size again, the first thing I'd do is, right, well, I'm 300 pounds at the moment, so I'll start at 400 pounds to 450 protein a day. I'll run that for 4 weeks. And then I'll increase it by 50 grams and see if I see any discernible changes. If I don't, I'll drop it back down.
Ah, I see.
And I'll just periodically push it up, see if I get a response. If I get a response, it stays at that. If I don't get a response, I bring it back down again.
Okay.
I've always been very much more of a trial and error with stuff like that. Instead of going off a set of numbers that someone's decided somewhere in the world, I'd rather have a start point and then adjust from there and see how I react or don't react.
Because we're all unique, right? We can't just, there's no formula, right?
Yeah, to a degree. and our ability to digest and utilize protein changes as well. So the more protein we push through, the in general, the more adapted we'll become to using protein. But it's saying that you then come with this problem of what protein source you're using and whether it starts to create resistance in the gut and stomach for absorption of that food type. Because if all you ate was chicken, there's a strong chance that in a while you'd start to reject chicken. We have enzymes, and we can literally run out of those enzymes to digest certain types of food. Particularly in modern day, where a lot of foods are pumped full of additives and things that basically what happens is a lot of foods contain the enzymes required for their digestion. In order to preserve these foods for longer periods of time, we remove those enzymes. So when an apple falls off my tree in my farm, if it hits the deck, it will be starting to go rotten within a day because it's full of enzymes. And those enzymes start to destroy the apple.
That's what it is, huh? Interesting.
Part of it. It's not the only process, but it's part of it. I buy one from the supermarket and I can leave it on the side for 4 weeks and it's still fresh. Because they've been sprayed, they've been treated, and they don't allow this chemical reaction to take place. So that happens with a lot of fortified foods. A lot of your breakfast cereals have enzymes removed, so they're allowed to stay on a shelf longer. The downside of that is it's harder work for your body to digest them. So whatever your protein intake is, you want to try and make sure it comes from varied sources as much as you can. You've also got to look at the amino profiles as well. Eggs contain the whole amino profile, but steak only contains partial, chicken only contains partial, fish only contains partial. But if you had a little bit of steak, chicken, and fish with every meal, you're going to get a complete amino profile. So a variation of protein sources allow you to get a more complete amino profile throughout the day.
That makes sense.
But yeah, I don't think as I'm dieting, I'd probably push protein slightly higher. Because it has a more thermogenic effect when it comes to fat loss. It requires more energy to digest it. Therefore, I burn more calories just digesting the protein in the first place. Off-season, I'd have protein slightly lower than I would pre-comp, and I'd have carbs, obviously, ultimately a lot higher.
Okay. Have you personally found that you need to keep your protein lower since you've been dealing with kidney issues?
No, I've tried it. I've tried low protein, I've tried high protein, and it seems to have no impact on my function whatsoever.
Wow, wow. Did the doctors tell you at first, were they like, hey, you're going to need to stop eating a lot of protein?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I did initially. Yeah, they did, and it showed no changes, and then I brought it up a little bit and it showed no changes. And then I sort of stuck where I am now, which is roughly 300 grams a day.
Okay.
250 to 300 grams a day.
How are you doing, by the way, on your progress? Because I know you were shooting toward fat loss and kind of just trimming down. Last time you were in the very low 300s. Did that reverse itself at all while you were on your holiday?
No, I dropped a couple of pounds while I was on holiday.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. I've actually probably put about 5 pounds on since I got back.
Okay.
Cause life's just been a bit hectic, but things are settling down a little bit now, more back into routine. So I'm back on a reasonable diet again today.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm sitting around the 300 and hang on, let me work it out. Cause I weighed myself this morning. Give me 2 seconds. I need to convert all my stones into pounds.
Yeah.
280 plus 28, 280, 308, 315.
Okay. I think that's where you were about last time we spoke about it.
315 this morning, and I'm probably about 5 pounds up than where I was when I came back off holiday.
Nice. All right. I've got one here. This is another bulking question from Rick Hall. He says, is it worth bulking if you're using anti-inflammatory drugs to sleep at night due to a bulging disc? I read some stuff about it pretty much stopping you from gaining muscle from the reduction in cell swelling. Just wondering if either of you have been in this situation before and how you dealt with it. Thanks.
Yeah, I have actually. I wouldn't say it completely stops muscle growth, but yes, it does impact muscle growth.
Hmm.
Part of the growth process chemically signaling is inflammation. Inflammation markers then cause the release of growth factors, stuff like IGF-1, MGF, BGF-2A. So a chemical that restricts inflammation markers restricts the strength of signal for growth factors release. So that's the sciencey bit, the chemical bit behind it. It doesn't stop it completely, but it will have an impact. Mm. And at the end of the day, though, the bottom line is if you're in pain from a disc issue, then you need your medication to manage that pain, whatever that might be. You might find you can use an alternative medication, but you're going to need some form of medication to manage that pain.
Yeah.
If that's going to impact slightly on your ability to grow at this point, well, it's just what it is, I'm afraid, isn't it? At the end of the day, I wouldn't for 1 minute suggest you do away your pain management for the sake of growth. But it may restrict it. It's frustrating, but it is what it is, I'm afraid. It's just one of those things you have to sort of just deal with.
Yeah, you can't not use the medication if you're dealing with a lot of issues, right?
Yeah, if you need it, you need it. And if you can't find an alternative that's not an anti-inflammatory, then you don't really have a great deal of choice. You could potentially look at topical inflammatories that are going to just really absorb within the area.
Wow.
But I don't think that – I don't know how effective they're going to be. You could look at a TENS machine as pain management and inflammatory management.
Mm.
There's definitely other things you could look at, but anything that's going to suppress system-wide inflammation is going to have an impact on that growth mechanism post-workout.
Sure. Okay. I dealt with a lot of back issues and then had to work a physical job on top of it. And there was a point I remember where I was living off of ibuprofen. And, I can't say that my progress was as good at that time, but at the same time, I was also dealing with a lot of pain and I probably couldn't train as well either, you know, just,
yeah.
And nothing was working out.
You know, you got to be sensible. It's sometimes the hard decision has to be made that you need to stop training, fix the problem, then go back to training.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what you end up doing is dragging the problem on far longer than it needs to be. And ultimately to greater detriment to your physique.
Yeah. We got two more here. One is, did your sex drive change the higher your doses were? And if so, in what direction did it go?
Down.
Yeah?
Yeah. Down.
You would think so. So a guy takes 500 milligrams a test and their libido goes through the roof. And then they take a gramma test, we'll say, and it goes down. Why is that, Dave?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
If you want the honest answer.
Yeah, I experience the same thing. 500, I'm fine. 750 or above, and I start to see a decrease.
I don't know if it's due to increased aromatization, increased prolactin levels, and it may be increased prolactin levels. As we said earlier on, you know, a high dose of test is going to create high prolactin a lot more than people realize.
Hmm.
I've never actually looked at bloods in relation to the problem. So I don't know if at that time these factors are playing a role. Mine was more dose, lifestyle, size, combination sort of thing. Just existing at the size and everything else just meant the last thing on my mind was sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I did find, when I ran growth hormone at a low dose every other day, my sex drive was insane.
Really? Growth hormone made it increase?
Oh, mentally so.
Wow.
Absolutely insane. Huh. And it's something that I've heard other people report as well. But yeah, I mean, my sex drive now is what I'd class as pretty normal.
Okay.
But no, I found that the high doses of sex drive went down.
Yeah, I found the exact same thing, which you wouldn't think that, you know, based off your experience in your first cycles, right?
It didn't crash, but it definitely reduced. And it wouldn't surprise me as prolactin is possibly the underlying factor there.
Mm, I could see that.
We never test prolactin when we're not running an Andolan because we don't just don't associate prolactin increases with any other drug, but it does happen with every drug.
Hmm. All right. One more here. This is from Sam Siggy. He says, can you guys discuss any experiences you've had with post-contest rapid weight gain? Why does it happen? Are hormones out of whack?
Water.
Yeah, exactly.
99.9% of the time is water and glycogen.
We just put the episode out, or it's coming out. As we record this, the next day it'll be coming out. So everybody will have heard it at this point. But we talk about the role diuretics play in this too.
Yeah, but it's rebound of water for the mass majority of people. Yeah. Now, that can be increased through several factors. It can be increased due to severe depletion, severe depletion of carbohydrates, severe depletion of fluids, the use of diuretics, as we have covered in a previous episode. But it can also be covered by estrogen rebound. A lot of guys will run into a comp on letrozole. They remove letrozole. Letrozole and Arimidex both have the same effect when they're removed. They stop aromatize being produced. You remove it, you get a rebound. You get a balloon. So suddenly, post-comp, you've suddenly got a rebound in water. You've got a rebound in glycogen retention. You've got a rebound because of the diuretics you've used. And now you've got an estrogen balloon, which is going to cause even more water retention. Hmm. So it's a lot of contributing factors at once. Chances are you've gone and had a shitty meal. You've sodium loaded like fuck post meal because you've gone and eaten pizza and kebabs and all the shit that you've got on fat.com, which is completely natural.
Yeah.
But that's going to cause water retention.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so many factors. And your body's gone through a very, very, very stressful experience, which, again, will cause water retention. So if you're prone to rebound issues, then you really have to manage your post-comp food and drugs very, very carefully. But the first thought of most people stepping off a bodybuilding show is not, right, where's my chicken and rice? It's where's fucking McDonald's?
Right, right. Or pizza or whatever else it's going to cause right?
I knew a guy that used to go to a show with a suitcase.
Oh my gosh.
And this is what he used to do. When he used to go shopping in prep, anything he fancied, he'd buy.
Oh my gosh.
And he got put in a suitcase.
That's funny.
And then as soon as he stepped off stage, he opened the suitcase. So he would buy cakes and all sorts that get stuck in the fridge or the freezer or whatever it was, and then it all get piled into the suitcase for the day of the show, and he'd turn up at the show, and as soon as he finished, he'd open the suitcase.
Oh, my gosh.
And just dive in.
I see people that do that. I can tell with clients that are possibly going to go off the rails afterward when they start stockpiling.
Yeah, sorry. I just had to tell my daughter to do something.
Oh no worries. Yeah, I can see that. You know, some clients are gonna do that when I can tell when they begin stockpiling. Like a month out, they start posting pictures of this cereal that they're buying and these cakes that they're putting in their freezer. It's like, this is gonna be bad after the show.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it can be dangerous though. It can be very dangerous.
It can land you in the hospital, right?
It can kill you. Hmm. But yeah, rapid weight gain through water retention puts a massive strain on the heart. And fishing about with calcium and potassium and sodium levels can really affect the way the heart beats as well.
Yeah. And the other thing too, you know, the harder you pull water, the more of a dramatic water manipulation you do, the greater that rebound is going to be, you know?
It's with anything, the harder you push in one direction. So what's Newton's theories, isn't it? You know, that the harder a force you apply, the harder the response backwards is going to be.
That makes total sense.
I mean, it's not the proper law, but that's my very crappy interpretation of it.
But it makes sense, though, and it's true. Yeah. It's absolutely true.
Yeah. It applies with your body as well.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're getting some really great stuff here, Dave. We got a lot of good response from the episode so far. Every time we put a new one out, people are loving the show. A lot of great questions here too. I think we're on a roll at this point.
Good.
Yeah. You have any plans? Anything coming out on YouTube? Anything like that coming up soon?
I did mention the other episode that I was involved in a project that I wasn't sure if I could talk about.
You know? Oh, we didn't mention that in the beginning. How's that coming along?
It's called Brutal Muscle.
Brutal Muscle.
And it's going to be an online magazine.
Really?
It's the brainchild of Ben Chow and Luke Sandow. Ben Chow is Luke Sandow's
his training partner. Yeah. So you're going to be part of this.
I am going to be part of this. Josh Malley, who's current Mr. Universe, is also going to be on it. Somebody called Goliath.
Okay.
And then I believe they've got previous Mr. Olympias contributing to it and various other people popping in from various aspects of nutrition and training and drugs and whatever. And I've got a little corner in this website where when you enter my little corner, you become anonymous.
Okay.
So there's a forum on which you can post questions. And there will be articles and content and video going up in this section as well. But within that section, everything is anonymous.
Interesting.
So people can post questions, whoever they are, without fear of any attachment to that question.
So people will post questions and then it's a forum and you're going to be able to provide them answers right there at Brutal Muscle.
Yeah. One thing we sort of discussed, and it's one thing that came through a conversation with Luke, was that there are pros that do want to ask questions but don't feel they can because of their status.
Sure, absolutely.
So this way, it doesn't alienate anybody from asking the question, and it doesn't matter if you fear that the question might be stupid. And we're hoping that it will actually encourage some honesty in what people reveal about their own usage. Because no one knows who it is.
Yeah. I love that idea.
I won't know who it is. But that's been made abundantly clear that I will have no access to see the people that are posting.
Interesting.
Obviously, I would have thought at some point. In fact, I don't think the system allows any backtracing. I think it's just a case of whenever anyone enters that room on the website, they become anonymous. So
I could go in and troll you then.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, if five people went in there, I wouldn't know who'd post what question.
I see.
You know, you'd be able to tell that these five people have entered the room, but you wouldn't know who was posting what.
All right. That's so cool, man. So this is an online magazine. This is going to be, so this is Luke Sandow's new project. This is going to be cool, man. I mean, he's made so much progress in the past few years. I mean, we've all known him, you know, on the size game. We've seen him as an amateur bodybuilder. We've seen him turn pro, and we've seen him put on some incredible muscle, man. This is going to be cool. This got to have a lot of momentum behind it.
Yeah, there's someone else involved, but the name escapes me. In the actual organization, there's three partners in total, I believe, but they're looking, they're getting a lot of high-end contributors, so it should be really good.
That will be, man. That's cool. That's really cool. So what do you got going on today, Dave?
I need to get to the garage and pick up my car.
And you training?
Trained this morning.
Oh, really? What'd you train?
Back.
Nice. That's what I'm going to do after we get off the line here. And by the way, Dave, I'm eating. I'm increasing my food, and I'm starting to put on a little weight, and I'm working to progressively increase my strength in the gym. So it's coming along. It's the start of UC3.
Fair enough. At least you're doing it and not me.
No. It's nothing close. I don't think anybody would want to watch me gain 20 pounds. That's not going to be nearly as entertaining, but it is my, you know, I'm having fun with it, and I'm excited to see where I can go. And man, I've heard so many people that have said, you know, just all sorts of great stuff. Like I said, you're inspiring a lot of people, and we're coming into this off season phase now. The NPC contests are about over, you know, the contest season is about over, and people are looking to gain muscle, and I can only see this thing getting more and more attention as we go. So I'm excited to see where we go with this, Dave, and I know everybody else is too.
Yeah, I am as well. And hopefully, you know, as we can develop and get more in depth with things, and we'll probably end up doing episodes that are more specialized on particular subjects, would have thought, as we move forward.
I think that'd be a great idea. Let's talk about that stuff.
Okay.
All right, guys. For another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally, and we will see you soon.
Goodbye.
1, 2, fuck off, drop out, never trust a fucking hippie. For that matter, I don't trust anyone. Quit school, don't work, living up the music you're from. If I can't do it, so could anyone. Drugs are good, unless you do things that you know you're not should. And when you do, people think that you're cool. When you do, people think that you're cool. Advice Radio.